So I share the exciting news already that I intend to actually finish the first chapter today. Whether I get to everything I want to say or not, but we're going to make sure we read all the psukim, because when we come back in a month, we will start the second chapter. There have been other chapters that we did that took this many. This is 6 or 7 weeks to do this parak. I think Shiras Devora maybe took about that long. We'll see how the next chapter is Shiras Chana. We'll see. It's only 11 psukim, the part that's the Shira, but that's also an action-packed parak. Okay, so we are going to pick up in the middle of the parak. Chana just finished her tefillah. She's davening for a son, and Eli watches her, and Eli blesses her, and we're going to pick up from Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19, in the first chapter. Vayashkimu baboker, and they got up in the morning, meaning Elkanah, who's Chana's wife, and Chana, and Pnina, and the whole Mishpacha, and Vayishtachavu with Hashem, and they bowed before Hashem before leaving. Vayashuvu, and they returned by Avoa Besam Haramasa, and they came to their house in Rama. Vayeda Elkanah Eschana Ishto, and Elkanah knew his wife intimately. Chana, Vayiskareo Hashem, and Hashem remembered her, and she became pregnant. Vayihi with Kufos Hayamim, and it was after a period of days, which Rashi tells us is 6 months and 2 days, basically the minimal period that a person, or according to Chazal, that could have a baby. Vatar Chana, Vatela Bain, Chana became pregnant, really that was at the beginning of those. Of that period of time, Bate was being, and she gave birth to a son. Vatikra es Shemo Shemuel, and she called him Shemuel, Shimei Hashem She'iltiv, because she said, from Hashem, I have borrowed him.
Requested
him. Okay.
And he answered us the idea he heard.
So let's see.
Otherwise, there's no place for the mem, right?
Oh, very good. So what's the mem doing there? So what's that? Yes. So good. So very good. So Rashi just tells us. I think, like Mr. Zappel was saying, that Mimendo She'iltiv, that She'il comes from to ask for. And I think you're right, that is the Pasuk Tzad. Later we'll see there's also going to be a discussion about borrowing or lending, but you're right, that's certainly the simple approach is, like, I asked for of him, I asked for him from Hashem. The Ralbag points out, as you did, that either way, right, if it comes from the word she'ela, to ask, so she should have called him Sha'ul, the Ralbag says. So he says, right, he says, Roy Shetikra Shmo Sha'ul, it would have been proper to, instead of naming him Shmuel, to call him Sha'ul, who of course we're going to meet soon, who's going to be the first king of Israel, his name is going to be Sha'ul. But says the Ralbag, I've already told you that in the Torah, when people name names, they're not, like, so exact about getting, you know, exactly according to the Shoresh. If you look at all the names of the Shvatim, the one he mentions is Reuven. Kira Hashem Ve'ani. So, it's like, she misses out half the point. Reuven, see my son, but she misses out the point where he saw my difficulties, my challenges. But yet, that's the name. Or he says Noah, which is supposed to be Zayin Achameinu Imaseinu. The Torah says this one will comfort us. He says if that was so, then he should have been called Menachem. But they called him Noah still, because when it comes to names, not everyone is so exact. You have an idea that's behind it, but when you come down to actually giving the name, it doesn't have to, you know, customarily didn't always match exactly to the Soresh, to the root from which you were coming. The Radak, though, says, more of an explanation, and the Radak says, Me'asem Se'otiv, I asked for him from Hashem, and also you have May Kel from Hashem. So it was a combination of Shaul and May Kel, and it came out to Shemuel. I asked for him from Hashem combined into Shemuel. The Chasam Sofer in a tshuva, he's discussing names and what's proper to name, what's improper, different names that one shouldn't name. And there's a concept of same Rishayim Yirkav, that the names of Rishayim should rot. You're not supposed to name someone after a you're not supposed to name someone after a Rasha. So Yishmael did teshuva. Thank you. Yishmael did teshuva, but
we don't name anyone Esav, right?
Yeah, we definitely don't name Esav. So the Chasam Sofer says that there was a Shaul. There was a Shaul, I think, that appears as one of the Malchei Edom early on in Sefer Bereishis. As well, he says, there was someone named Shaul ben Akananis, who the Gemara tells us was the same, was Zimri ben Salu, the Nasi, the prince of Shimon, of Shevet Shimon, who was involved in the Avera with the Midianite woman and was considered a Rasha. And the Gemara says that Shaul ben Akananis was the same person as Zimri. So therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, it's not proper to name someone Shaul. And he says that's why Ein Safik, I have no doubt that is the reason why Chana did not call her son Shaul, but rather she called him Shmuel, even though, as we pointed out, as the Ralbag says, it would have been more fitting to call him Shaul, according to the name that she was, the idea behind the name, but still she called him Shmuel, and says, Chasam Sofer, I have no doubt that it was for this reason, because Shaul was the name of a Rasha, and says, Chasam Sofer, so what about Shaul, the king of Israel, the first king of Israel, Shaul ben Kish, who was named Shaul? So he says his father Kish wasn't careful about this. And he says, and look what happened. You know, look how he turned out. We're going to see, you know, the story of Shaul, obviously a complex character, but in the end he seems to fail in his mission, and he dies, and he does not last as the king of Israel. Chasam Sofer says, he never should have been named Shaul. You don't name after Rishaim, you don't name after evil people. So what about Rabbi Yishmael? So Jerry asked that also. I'm not sure, but Yishmael did do tshuva at the end of his lifetime. So that may be... Yeah. So it's a good question. There are people who name Shaul nowadays, I can tell you that. Yeah, Yishmael you don't find. I know someone who we're gonna learn about Eli a little bit, in the next parak. Yeah. Well, we're going to learn about Saul in a few chapters. He's going to be he's going to come into play. So, what? The Jews. That was what they were commanded to do. So we're going to learn about Eli a little bit, and Eli, we're going to see, we're going to learn why, but he gets a curse on his descendants, and people also don't name their children Eli generally. I know someone who did name his son Eli, and then shortly after that, I guess someone told him that he shouldn't name his son Eli, and that he should change the name, and he did, and he changed his son's name to Eliyahu from Eli, and apparently all you have to do to change the name is go into shul, clap on the bima, and say, my son's name is no longer
people named Eli today,
now,
that's short for something else? Like, there's a lot of people
I can't tell
Eli
you that it's
like
always
Eli.
Short.
Maybe Eliezer.
It could be short for Eliezer, it could be short for Elio, Elimelech, but apparently you're not supposed to name Eli. I don't think Eli wasn't a Rasha, but Eli was cursed, as we're going to see. Well, I think the main ones appear. Yeah. A lot of names in Tanakh don't appear. That's true. Well, I went to a bris, and the person named his son David, and in his speech, he said, "I don't understand why anybody would name this child anything else besides for David. David was so amazing, you know." So there are other names, but you know, we generally choose the names that are the most the people who excelled and the people who are the greatest traditions. Yeah. Depends how big your family is, also. No, but so clearly, you know, went wrong, you know. From the beginning, from the beginning, yes, everything's part of the plan, but that doesn't explain, you know, that doesn't justify his mistake.
I didn't say it was
right. So he failed and he missed.
No. His method was complete.
Okay, I think when we get there, we'll discuss it more. Okay, pasuk chaf aleph. Vayal ha'ish Elkanah v'chol beso, and the man Elkanah and his entire household went up lisboach la'Hashem to bring offerings to Hashem. Es zevach hayamim, the offerings of the day, meaning of the Yontif time. The es nidro, as well as Nidarim, oaths that he took if he promised to bring karbanos, so now is when he filled those. Specifically, it would seem that these would be related to having a child, that he took Nidarim in order to, on condition that he would have a child. The Chana lo alasa. And Chana did not go up. Ki amra le'isha, because she said to her husband, Ad yigamel hanar v'hav Yosef, until I wean the child, he's no longer nursing, then I will bring him up, v'nira es p'nei Hashem, and he will see the face of Hashem, v'yashav sham ad olam, and he will remain there in the Mishkan forever. Again, Chana had promised in her tefillah that she would dedicate her son that would be born to Hashem, and now she tells her husband, he's too young to go now, but as soon as he's ready, I will bring him up. Did she tell Elkanah? So it's not clear. There is discussion about how her oath could take effect, because a mother is not allowed to make her child a Nazir, only a father is. So the Mepharshim say that he confirmed the neder, which means you would have heard about it. We'll see in a moment. So the Malbim here says, let's see the next pasuk, and then we'll come back to that question. Vayomer lo Elkanah Isha, and her husband Elkanah said to her, Asiyah tov be'einayach, do as is good in your eyes, shvi ad gamlecho, so stay here until you wean her. Ach yakeim Hashem es divaro, just Hashem should fulfill his word, that meaning your blessing, your request that Eli confirmed. So he's really referring to Eli's word. Hashem should uphold Eli's blessing to you that your tefillah should be answered. Vateshev v'isha, and the woman remained, Chana remained, Vatenek es bina, and she nursed her child, her son, Ad Gamla Uso, until she weaned him. Yeah, so, it seems that he it's a machlokes in the first place, whether he was or not. Whether when she said, Mora yo yawel rosho, did it mean a razor won't go on his head and she was making him a nazir? Or did it mean that that Mora, fear of man, shouldn't go be upon his head? And she wasn't making a nazir. It's actually machlokes tanayim in the Mishnah. According to thinking that he was a nazir, it seems that what he's deriving it from is that the same terminology was used by Shimshon, and Shimshon was, he was also a unique kind of Nazir, but basically a full-fledged Nazir, except for becoming Tameh. He was able to become Tameh, but it seems that Shmuel would have been a full-fledged Nazir. Unless you're a Nazir Shimshon, which is its own type of Nazir. Probably. So the Malbim on this pasuk actually says that this is the first time that she heard, that Elkanah heard of her oath to make her son Shmuel dedicated. Forget about Nazir for a second, but dedicated to the Mishkan. You know, to be serving in the Mishkan for his whole life. And here, Elkanah, since it's the first time that he heard it, a husband, when he hears his wife taking oath, the first time he has a chance to nullify it. But if he doesn't, then it becomes set. And says the Malbim, right here is when he heard her oath. She told him, I'm going to bring him to Hashem. I'm going to bring him to the Mishkan. He's going to remain there. Elkanah could have nullified it. But instead, he affirmed it. He said, do what's good in your eyes. And Hashem should uphold the word of Eli. The Mefarshim discussed exactly what aspect of the bracha was Elkanah referring to here that should be upheld, that should be granted. Rashi says he was referring to that she asked for Zera Anashim, that for a which we understood either to mean a strong son or a son who is average, like everyone else, that doesn't stand out, that we talked about why she would ask that. Some say Rashi brings Chazal. There's a medrash that comes up repetitively in the Mefarshim here, very interesting medrash, that at the time of Shmuel, there was a baskel, there was a heavenly voice, even months or years leading up to Shmuel's birth. Every day, this heavenly voice would come out and say, there's going to be a child born, and he's going to, be a tzaddik, and his name is going to be Shmuel. That was the prophecy of this heavenly voice that would come out. And everybody knew about it. And all the women who had children would name their son Shmuel. So, and when they saw his deeds, so that when they saw how their children turned out, they said, this isn't the Shmuel. But when Shmuel Hanavi was born, they said, this is the Shmuel that's referred to. That also, by the way, is another reason, perhaps, why she named him Shmuel, because that's what everybody was doing, because, not because that was the name of the year, you know, it wasn't like Hunter or, you know, whatever's popular these days, but because it's Baskel, and it turned out that he was the one being referred to. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Vata Alehu Ima Tasir Gimalati. And indeed, she brought him up to the Mishkan when she had weaned him. Biparim Shlosha. She brought along three bulls, to bring as karbanos, to bring as sacrifices, the eifa achas kemach, and one eifa measurement of kemach, the nevel yayin, and a jug of a pouch of wine, but to the Yehu Beis Hashem Shiloh, and she brought him to the house of Hashem in Shiloh, the Hana'ar Na'ar, and the Na'ar, the lad, was a lad. So what does that mean, and the lad was a lad? So the Sabbath one is just saying that he was still young, he was still a lad, the point was he was still very young. We'll see, right, he was just weaned, so the Marsha says he was 2 years old at this time, when she brought him to the Mishkan. The Radak learns that this word Na'ar, and in general the word Na'ar, comes from the word to be Mina'er, which could mean to sift. That it's at that age, when you become a lad, not 2 years old, but Na'ar is usually like 11 or 12, or a little bit older, at that age is when you're able to start sifting through what the Radak refers to as being tov u'ra, between good and bad. You develop it. Na'ar is the age that you begin to have a sense of morality, a sense of what's good and what's bad, and you're able to, make decisions properly. And what the Pasuk is saying here is that already Shmuel, at this very young, ripe age of 2 years old, it seems, was already of a intelligence to be able to discern such things. The Malbim says that the word Na'ar, lad, comes from the word to wake up, the Orer, to awaken or to wake up. And it's at that age that a person's abilities are awakened, a person's physical abilities, a person, they begin to develop more physically when they become a lad, and also in intelligence, and it goes from just potential to actualization at that age. And again, Shmuel, at this very young age, developed these qualities already that are normally only developed in a 9 or 10 or 11 year old. And as we're going to see, Shmuel already is going to be able to pass in halacha at this young age. We talked about one of the requests that Chana made was that he should be average. That was one of her tefillos. Rav Yaakov Emden says she didn't get it. She wanted him to be average, but you see that it didn't happen. He was, others say that no, he was average, and then despite his being just normal, he was able to rise on his own, using developing himself, he was able to develop himself. And it's a mushy lesson. But, right, so that's what Rabbi Yaakov Emden says. He says, you see that this part of her request was not answered. Because look, already at 2 years old, he had the abilities of a 9 and 10 year old, and maybe older, where we're going to see he's going to passing a halacha already at that young age. Pasuk Chafei, Vayishchatu es hapar, and they slaughtered the bull. Vayaviu es hanar el Eli, and they brought the lad to Eli. We're going to come back to discuss this pasuk a little bit more, but just at this moment, we'll just discuss a simple understanding. They brought him to Eli to show Eli, look, your nevuah, your prophecy has been fulfilled. That's how Rashi learns. So Pasuk Chavav, Vatomer, and she said, and Chana said, Be Adoni, please, my master, you should, Eli, you should train him. Chay Naftecha Adoni, you're right, you should live, my master, some sort of oath maybe. Ani ha'isha ha'nitzeves imcha bazet. I am the woman that was standing there with that tefila 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, if you remember, with Baal Hashem to daven to Hashem. Al Hanar Hazeh Hispalalti. I daven for this child. This is the child that I daven for. Vayiteng Hashem li asher elati. And Hashem granted my request. Asher sa'alti me'imo. That I requested of him. The Malbim points out, we discussed last week that she davened directly to Hashem, not through any mala. That's how we daven nowadays also, but she said that was unique in her time. She davened directly to Hashem, and that's what she's pointing out. Sha'alti me'imo, I asked this from Hashem directly. V'gam anochi hishiltiu la'Hashem. This is what I was referring to earlier. She says, and also now I am lending him to Hashem. Kol hayamim asher haya, who asher haya, all the days that he was and that he'll be, hu sha'ula Hashem, he is lent, he is on loan to Hashem, he's going to serve Hashem his whole life, v'yistachu sham la'Hashem, and they bowed there to Hashem. Okay.
There was a time when people didn't pray directly to God.
The Malbim says that in that time it was common to daven to that a malach bring your case before Hashem. And the Malbim talks about how then you would daven for longer because you would explain all the, you know, what your merits are so that the malach can bring your tefillah to Hashem, your merits to Hashem. Not what we do normally nowadays, and there may be some people might have issues with doing it that way.
That's problematic. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting in itself. But
yeah.
It's not what we do normally. Although, as I pointed out, right, you say Shalom Aleichem, and you say the Malachim, Baruchuni L'Shalom, you know, bless me for peace. So you are davening to the Malachim to bless you for peace. And you're already getting involved in that. If you say it, some people don't say it, but you're getting involved. Or in Slichos, when you say Machnisei Rachamim, Machnisei Rachamenu, those who bring you mercy, bring our mercy, lifnei before Hashem, you're davening to the Malachim to bring your tears to Hashem, bring your prayers to Hashem. So it does pop up here and there. Some people won't say any of those things because, you know, they have theological difficulties. Some people just don't have strong opinions and just say whatever it says in the Siddur or in the Bencher or in the Shlichim. Okay, so the one last topic to focus on is, before we conclude here, is this Pasuk going back to Pasuk Chafei. Pasuk Chafei, Vayishchatu es hapar, and they shechted and they slaughtered the bull, Vayaviu es hanar el Eli, and they brought the lad to Eli. So the Gemara wonders about this pasuk. It kind of seems like two very disparate ideas. You have and they shechted the par, and they brought the nar to Eli. The way that we explained, and they brought him to Eli, was they brought him to Eli to show that, look, your prophecy has been fulfilled. But there doesn't seem to be a connection between, and they shechted the bull, and they brought the lad to Eli. So the Gemara says, Shmuel more halacha b'shnei rabo haya. Shmuel, he ruled on a halacha in front of his Rebbe, in front of Eli, HaKohen. Shenemar quotes this pasuk, and it asks the question, Mishum Zivayishchatu es hapar hebiu es hanar el Eli, what's the connection? Because they shechted the bull, so they brought the nar, they brought the lad to Eli, what does one have to do with the other? So the Gemara says, this is what happened. Ela amar lahem Eli, Eli said to them, bring a Kohen to shech the bull. Bring a Kohen to shech the animal. Shmuel saw this, that they were looking for a Kohen. And he said to them, why are you looking for a Kohen? Chita bizar ksheira. Chita, the slaughtering of a sacrifice, the slaughtering portion, the first step, is permitted for a non-Kohen to do it. Why are you looking for a Kohen? They brought him to Eli. So that's, and they brought him to Eli. That's that part of the part. So they brought him to Eli. So Amar Lei Minalacha, at least like, how do you know this? How do you know that a Zar, that a non-Kohen, is allowed to do Shita? So Shmuel said, it doesn't say B'Shachat HaKohen, it doesn't say in the Kohen to check. Rather it says, the Krivu HaKohanim, that the Kohanim should bring it forth, should bring it forward, should, meaning from Kabbalah Ve'elach, from receiving the blood after the Shita in the dish, and bringing that to the Mizbeach, that's what has to be done by a Kohen. But before that, it could be done by a Zar, by a non-Kohen. And that's what Shmuel called him. So says Eli, Amale, Neymar Shapir Kamar. You know what? Shmuel, you are absolutely right. You're right. You got that halacha right. Miu, however, Morib halacha b'fnei Rav Chata. But you are paskining in front of your Rebbe. And Komar halacha. What? Good question. He wasn't his Rebbe yet. We'll get to that. The Komar halacha b'fnei Rav Chayev Misa. And a person who paskins halacha in front of the Rebbe, says the Gemara, is Chayev Misa. Deserves death. So that's where Chana now comes. Astya Chana, the Katzavcha Kameh. Chana came and she cried before Eli. She said, Ani ha'isa nitzavas imcha bazeh. The next pasuk. Batomer, she said, Be Adoni, please my master. Ani ha'isa nitzavas imcha bazeh. I'm the woman who was davening there. And then he says Eli, Let me punish him. And I'll give you, I'll daven for it that you have a better son than him, even. I'll replace him. He should get punished, and I'll replace him. I'll daven for you to have another son. Relay, lo. She said no. El Hanar Hazeh Hispalati. That's the next pasuk. I daven for this child. I want this child. I don't want you to take him away from me. So Marsha points out something beautiful here, that she was saying in this last statement, that this is the one that I daven for. I don't want the one that you daven for, I want the one that I daven for. This is a product of my tefillah, a product of my labor, of my challenges, of what I went through. This is the son that I want, not a son that you would provide. Okay, so the whole thing is kind of puzzling. It's the beginning is puzzling, the end is puzzling. What does it mean? He's going to punish him, he's not going to punish him. So, I don't have all the answers. The Marsha does point out, right, we're talking about a two-year-old here. We're talking about a young child, right? As we said, he had developed the intellectual capacity of an older child, but at the end of the day, he was very young. So he says that indeed Eli wasn't going to rule on him in a human court. He was saying in Dini Shemayim, in a heavenly court, he was chayev. That even if you're a child, you could be chayev, you could be found obligated in the heavenly court, the Marsha says. Yeah, and that's what the Marsha said. So I still don't know what Eli was... Right, I don't know what Eli's role in this was. We might see something more about that. I don't remember. But that was the discussion there. So the question, though, obviously is that, did Eli not know this halacha? What was going on here? It's like an obvious inference from a pasuk. How did Shmuel know it even if Eli didn't know?
He's being showed up by a two-year-old.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Right. So. So, we definitely understand not. I don't know. The Marsha seems to say he could be Chaim and Dinyan Shemayim. I think there are those who also say that it depends on the capacity of that person, of that child. If they have the intellectual capacity of an older person and the maturity, then they could be Chayev.
Kind of like Joseph showing up his brothers, even though they were the elder brothers. He was like, I'm the best.
Right. I think they brought them also. I saw something. I kind of... Oh, I'm not sure. I think it could be the first thing to say, but I didn't focus on it. So. So the Mefarshim say in different ways that certainly Eli knew the halacha. He knew that a Kohen is that it doesn't have to be a Kohen to check. But still, there's a certain cover, there's a certain, it doesn't have to be a Kohen, but it's better for it to be a Kohen, they held. And that was why they preferred a Kohen. Still, the problem was that they were delaying the mitzvah in order to go find a Kohen, because there, for whatever reason, wasn't a Kohen available. So that's what some of our can say was what was going on here. Yeah, Eli wasn't going. He wasn't there, apparently, because they came to him. I don't know who they is.
Eli wasn't there. Why? How is...
How is it Bishnei Rabbah?
How is he right. Showing him up?
Okay, good question.
He was a 2-year-old kid. He didn't even know Eli existed.
Yeah, so it seems that he knew he existed. It seemed that he knew that Eli had said to do it this way, and even if it wasn't directly in front of him, but he was in his house, and that's enough.
But again, he's 2 years old.
So let me ask you a different question. So then Yoyada asked a couple of questions. Then Yoyada says, first of all, how did Eli not know this halacha? How did Eli not know that a Kohen should, that doesn't have to be a Kohen? Furthermore, why did they listen to Shmuel? You know, if Eli, the Kohen Gadol, told them to do something, and then a little young toddler, you know, who's very smart, he's obviously a child prodigy, but he tells them actually, you know, it's to be done this way, or it could be done this way. Why do they listen to Shmuel? So the Ben Yoyada says that certainly Eli knew that it could be a non-Kohen who does the slaughtering. And he knew the pasuk, and he knew it all. But still, as I mentioned, like other Mefarshim say, they preferred to have a Kohen, and that was their minug. That was their minug, was to always try to get a minug, get a Kohen, and it seemed like it had the status of a minug, and it was we like to keep our minhagim, our customs. Customs minhagim are very important, and carry halachic status. But when Shmuel saw them delaying the mitzvah, looking for the right Kohen who knew how to do shlita, so he said, it's not necessary. It's only a minug, and it's better to pass up on the minug rather than delay the slaughter, delay the mitzvah. And they heard what he said, and they said, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know, what you're saying, and we're going to do that. It wasn't that they were listening to him more than Eli. He wasn't really contradicting Eli. Eli was just telling them to keep the minug. Eli wasn't there when everything was being delayed. You know, so Eli would have agreed that it should have been done this way. Then they didn't even ask Eli. They said, you know, he's right. We should just get a non-Kohen. And the minhag isn't relevant over here. So, and when Eli asked him, how do you know this halacha? He was just testing him to make sure he knew what he was talking about. And then Eli says, you're right. You know, you were right. You're right about the halacha, you're right that it should override the minhag. However, you are a mora halacha in front of your Rebbe. You're passing in halacha in front of your Rebbe, and that is a problem. So the Ben Yoyada asked this question, how was he his Rebbe? He just arrived that day. How was he his Rebbe? So he gives two answers. So, one answer is that Eli was the shofet. He was the judge of the generation. He was the leader of the generation. And so, he automatically has the status of Rebbe. He's the Rav Mubak. He's the established Rebbe. And he automatically has that status. That is one answer. And the other answer is that, which is a very interesting idea, that once he was brought into Eli's house to become Eli's Talmud, Shmuel was going to be Eli's student, even if he hadn't learned a word from him yet. But he signed up for the yeshiva, he signed up to be Eli's student, he is now Eli's student. Whether he's learned from him or not, You know, you show up to yeshiva on the first day, your Rebbe is your Rebbe even before he taught you anything. So, and that's his second answer to why Eli was already called his Rebbe. Yes, Rich.
It's true. Everything we're supposed to do, our whole religion is about teaching kids, right? Everything that we do, we teach our children. So here, a kid comes in and says something that's really smart. So what's the first response? Let's kill it. It should be, well, why don't I teach them what's the right thing to do? Right? Or what, you know, why are we upset at this kid? Why don't, especially so young, you know, it's not like he's a 20-year-old being disrespectful, you know.
Right.
Why is there the reaction this way and not being nice and teaching him and showing him the right way?
Good question. It seems there was a higher expectation for him. Based on his, you know, again, his intellectual capacity, his maturity, could be there was just a higher expectation for someone on that level. It's hard to imagine the whole thing. You know, the whole thing is hard to imagine. You know, like imagine a 2-year-old who can pass me out off and quote the pasuk and like. It would also have its own issues to say that, but. Thanks. Was there anything
problematic else answer to a problematic question?
Yeah. All right. I think we'll hold here.